Now.
Hello and welcome to the next episode of the Especially Interesting Podcast with Orcanomy. We are your co-hosts, David Gray Hammond and Tigger Pritchard.
Yay.
So today we're here with Edith. Edith, who are you and what are we talking about?
So my name's Edith. I am an autistic assistance dog handler. And that is exactly what we're going to be talking about today, autism assistance dogs.
Yes. Okay, this is another one where I'm reasonably excited. And as some of you that listen to us know, David keeps me in tow. But the dogs, as you know, if you know anything about me, I am so much a better person with a dog around, especially Mrs. Pebbles. I am so much more. So this one I've been really looking forward to. So I better crack on with my questions as I'm getting really excited here. So when did you first discover that you are awesomely autistic?
So I had suspicions that I was autistic for quite some time since I was about 15. My best friend would show me like information. She'd be like, "You fit this." And I did end up trying to go to the doctors about it. They declined me and went, "No, you're too smart to be autistic," which is utter, ridiculousness. And then at the age of 19, I had a specific learning difficulties assessment where the lady said to me, "I'm going to give you a specific learning difficulty thing so that you can get the help that you need. But in reality, you need to look into autism and you being autistic." And I then started delving into that and I joined the wonderful world of the Autistic Society group thing.
Good. Lush.
Fantastic.
So let's get into the God, David, come on. Let's get into this question because this
Yeah,
is
let's do
such an
this.
important topic.
Okay. So we'll just get going with our first question. Does an assistance dog have to come from a charity?
So an assistance dog does not have to come from a charity. By the Equality Act of 2010, an assistance dog is a dog that helps mitigate a disability for the handler. And as long as the assistance dog is highly trained, any assistance dog is valid. So it doesn't have to be from a charity. That means that if any company or anyone tries to tell you where is their booklet, where's their ID, are they registered? There is no register. If anyone tries to tell you there's a register, it might be a scam. But in general, no, an assistance dog does not have to come from a charity. You can own a train. You can own a train with an organization. You can go through a charity. There's a variety of different ways, but predominantly because charities tend to be very lacking in not only in the amount of dogs they can provide, also in the fact that their criteria can be very extensive. So a lot of people don't actually match it, considering the fact there's only, I think, two assistance dog organizations that relate to autism that are known through the ADUK organization. It's quite limited in that aspect.
I think that's
So I have a
really, oh, sorry, Tigger.
oh, go on, David.
I
Go on,
think
I'm
that's
sorry.
really important information to know because I think a lot of people do think that assistance dogs have to come from a charity, don't they? To know that, the Equality Act actually says no, as long as they're highly trained, it's valid. I think that's really important for people to know, isn't it?
Yeah. It's very
And just,
important because of the fact that a lot of people don't realize that as long as this assistant dog mitigates your disability, you do have public access rights. The only time they can decline you is obviously if your dog acts out, then obviously they can tell you to leave, but they cannot tell you that you need to be a part of a charity or you need to be registered with ADUK. That is not legally binding.
I was going to say for people listening, the documentation, criterion stuff, I'll try and make sure links to those important areas that are in the literature, so to speak, that we add on to the podcast as well. Because it'd be really important for individuals to look at and to get the most up-to-date, legislation from there and so on. But also for those awesome listeners we have, what does an assistance dog do?
So an assistant dog, as I said, helps mitigate the handler's disability. So for example, you can have a variety of assistance dogs from hearing dogs, autism dogs, even guide dogs are a form of assistance dog. but they help mitigate the person's disability and help them live a fairly more normal life. So it can give a lot of independence to people.
I mean, I certainly know when we were chatting before, we pressed the record button. From my perspective, I remember leaving. I remember leaving work because of stress issues a long time ago, a provider I worked at. And I used to dog sit. Dogs are just part of my soul. So I used to dog sit for a friend. And I used to go out. So when I was really low and really stressed, having this awesome young dog around enabled me to get out, enabled me to go to places, enabled me to converse with people when I didn't want to converse with people, because the safe topic would be him. And we talk about him, and it actually having him around, which I think his owner knew at the time, did an awful lot to support my mental health issues at the time, which is just the process I was going through. And I think I've known ever since, I am a much better, calmer, safer, wholer, I don't know what words you want to use really, individual when I'm with the dog. Not all dogs, but most dogs, but certainly well, Mrs. Pebbles, for those of you out there that know her, you know, moments of high anxiety, high stress, whoa, do I hunt her out, because she can make such a difference. And that's something that's been with me for as long as I can remember, really. And it's interesting what the public perception of, you know, an assistance dog is, and how they, you know, and I'm very much with what's been happening in America and so on with assistance animals. And it's just gone from dogs into, you know, other animals that are taken on board planes and so on and so forth. I've read loads of things about it in the past couple of years. But it's really interesting to realize that, you know, for so many of us, having that extra gorgeous entity there is just so, so, so important, and really just delivers so much awesomeness. But this is me personally speaking, really, just so much awesomeness into my life. And of course, we've seen your young. Go on.
Oh, sorry. So the only problem with branching into the emotional support aspect of things is actually emotional support is not a task that is valid. So there are emotional support animals that do not have public access rights. So you can potentially convince somebody in the housing, so housing wise, to let you have an emotional support animal, but they don't have to be. It's very much an option. Whereas assistance dogs, they legally are accepted anywhere, except for a few places where people might be at risk. So, for example, surgical rooms, some zoos, places like that. But generally, that's the biggest issue that a lot of people come under fire for, because an emotional support animal, you know, doesn't do the same thing as an assistance dog. And although, yes, Alfie does provide me emotional support, very much so, that is not one of his tasks. His tasks are separate to that.
And it's interesting, because what happened was all of a sudden a range of individuals from the emotional aspect, you know, individuals who are also autistic, were also saying, look, you know, and I'd read reports of, you know, American Airlines where people try to, you know, hey, it's my rabbit, it's my guinea pig, it's my hamster, it's my spider, you know, it's my snake, it's my gecko, it's, you know, I need. And they were like, no, sorry, if it was an assistance dog, yeah, but otherwise, no. There is no legislation that says we have to allow you to bring that animal on board. And I can see how that, again, is an area that's quite, you know, fluid and changing at the moment as well. But yeah, as many things are. So, David, over to the next question to you.
Yeah, I think this actually segues quite nicely into the next question. So why are assistance dogs so beneficial to autistic individuals?
So assistance dogs can provide a variety of tasks that are perfect for people who are autistic. For example, Alfie is actually trained to detect when I'm about to go into a meltdown. So that's through a variety of different things, like increasing in heart rate, cortisol levels. So he can also detect panic attacks, but that's considered more of a psychiatric task than necessarily an autism task. He's trained to do deep pressure therapy, which is similar to like a weighted blanket. Imagine having a weighted blanket with you everywhere you go that you can just sit down and, you know, have them respond in that way to calm you down. They can also take you out to quiet places. They can also help guide you when you're feeling a bit more maybe dissociated from high stress environments. They can provide so much help just in general with life. For someone who's autistic, because I know that a lot of people who are autistic can also be, bear with me, I can't remember the name of it, where you're unable to detect your emotions.
Alexithymia.
Yes. So they could be alexithymic, and an assistance dog would be extremely important for that, because of the fact that they can actually help tell you when you're about to be anxious, or help tell you when you're having a stronger reaction. So your, you know, vitals are going up. I have a friend who's alexithymic, and Alfie, my assistance dog, has poked her before and told her, like, oh, something's, you know, something is up right now, levels are rising. And although at first she thought it was quite bizarre, she realized that that would be so helpful for her to understand her own emotions. And that is very helpful for me as well, because I struggle to detect my own anxiety levels, my own overwhelming levels by myself. And I need him to tell me before I notice, because by the time I've noticed, it's already too late and I'm about to go into a meltdown or a panic attack. So extremely important tasks. They can also help get your medication for people who have you know, memory issues. So because I'm autistic with ADHD, my memory is fantastic. It is the, that was sarcastic, apologies, but that is the level of memory I have that just makes me forget my medicine, and he can actually remind me when to take my medicine, give it to me. And in general, just having him there, although emotional support isn't a task, it's so vital and it's so important, because it just gives you that support that you need.
That's awesome, isn't it? I mean, awesome. I know that the having a dog around is important to me in so many different ways, but I also wished maybe if I was a bit younger, I'd explored this area before, and it's certainly a route I think I would have gone down. So I think it would have made a huge difference to my life. And maybe I'll still do, I don't know, but it's certainly the benefits, the understanding. I mean, I've worked with some organizations before when they tried to develop biofeedback, you know, like using watches and so on. So your galvanic skin response, your heart rate increases and so on. That's a precursor to, you know, and it happens before you're consciously aware of it. And then using those to kind of go, right, we need to do X, Y, and Z to reduce the anxiety that's building and so on. But to me,
the problem is a lot of, the problem is a lot of the time that technology is actually not as accurate as a dog. There are,
I was going to go on. Yeah, I totally agree with that.
So for example, someone who is diabetic, they might have like an insulin machine, an insulin detector. I can't remember exactly what it's called.
Insulin pump.
Insulin pump. Thank you very much. But for example, there's loads of people who are diabetic who have assistance dog who actually tell them when they're going hypo, when they're going hyper, and they will tell them before the device even activates, or they can tell them when it malfunctions if they can't, you know, realize, or they don't hear it if they're sleeping. Like generally, there are far better option than a lot of, like, I have a watch that tells me when my heart rate's high, and he's been quicker than my watch. I'll be very honest, it's just I look down at my watch after he's alerted and I go, oh, okay, my heart rate's rising, that makes sense.
So how does he do that? Is it smell? Is it
biochemical? That's gonna be my question. I was gonna ask.
Sorry, Dame, sorry.
It's predominantly smell. So for example, assistants can be trained to smell a variety of things, from like sweat production, like excessive sweat production. They can be trained to also detect heart rate, which I believe is through smell as well. Cortisol levels for things like anxiety. Also other things is they can actually, so I just remembered that another one of his tasks actually harmful stim prevention. So if I was to hit myself, he would stop me from doing that. Which is very helpful for someone who is late diagnosed, because I never knew like a healthy way of stimming. So when I get overwhelmed, the fact that he can stop me from doing anything that might be excessively harmful is fantastic. But apologies, sorry, my mind went on a little bit of a rail.
It's fab.
I can't remember the question. Apologies.
It was. Go on, David.
How does he know these things? How does he?
Yes. Another thing is that they can actually see micro changes in your posture, in your movement. So for example, if you start tapping your foot, they can actually like put their head on it to like tell you, hey, you're tapping your foot, that you might not actually notice. Or for example, they can detect if you are becoming a little bit more like unsteady, a little bit shaky, like before you can even notice it yourself. Such micro little movements that they can see, which is fantastic. Honestly, if I knew how they did it, I would be, you know, extremely, extremely knowledgeable. But I think they're just so fantastic that you can't really tell, because how can you tell that an animal has such a strong nose or such good perception of changes that even myself, I can't detect them?
I think it shows you sometimes how our brain, I mean, you know, the aspect of how we perceive colour and the rods and cones in our eyes, and then, you know, how we decode hearing and so on and so forth. It shows you how, to a certain degree, that we're limited by our, you know, external receptors or internal receptors and so on. But it just shows my you internal how amazing. Sir.
Oh, sorry, I keep amazing. Doing this. my internal receptors are all off. I can't detect when I'm going to be anxious until I'm already having a panic attack. I can't tell when I'm going to have a meltdown until I've already had the meltdown where I'm starting to have it. So it's so important to have him there, because he will actually get me out of situations.
It's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, he'll get me out of situations where I might think, I'm fine. And then I realize I'm not fine. I need to leave, so that it also prevents the likelihood of my agoraphobia from getting worse, because I have a fear of constantly having panic attacks in public. So if you can imagine him detecting when or closer to the time, so I can get out and find a safe space, means that I'm less likely to be fearful of leaving the house.
It just reinforces to me how, you know, there are other you know, species upon the planet that are amazing, but for dogs, which I have a slight interest in, it just shows you that perceptual aspect and how, you know, how important that relationship is between the two of you. It's just absolutely lush.
And actually, I've thought of another question which we hadn't planned on. Do you mind if I ask it?
No, of course, fire away.
Can any breed of dog be an assistance dog, or does it have to be specific breeds?
So I will start with the easiest thing. So for anyone who doesn't know my assistant's dog, he is a Zuchon, which is a Shih Tzu cross Bichon, which is not the typical breed. There are a select few top breeds they recommend, but any dog can be an assistant's dog as long as they have the right temperament. They fit the right criteria, so they shouldn't be reactive, aggressive. They should be calm. They should be able to deal with all sorts of information, you know, obviously when they're on, like when they're working, because there are times where dogs will be yappy, they will be like playful, but they can't be reactive. They have to have a certain level of calmness and they have to have a certain temperament. But generally most dogs can be assistance dogs. It's just more about the fact that a lot of not typical breeds do end up getting washed. So washed is a term where an assistance dog is no longer able to work, either due to reactivity or to the fact that they're not performing their task, which is different to them being retired. So being retired is just that, you know, they've worked, they're now no longer able to work, so they can retire later on. But if an assistance dog is failing within its training, then it can be washed, which is a very funny term, which when I first heard it, I was thinking, I wash my dog all the time. Why wouldn't I wash him? But a lot of dog breeds do end up getting washed. I think it says 1 in 4 assistance dogs end up getting washed because of the fact that either people don't want to train through the reactivity, or their dog just cannot undertake it, or they can actually go through trauma caused by things that happen through the public, you know, through public access work or other dogs, which can affect an assistance dog for life, which is why I know there will be a question where that will be very vital, and why I actually think that, you know, you have to act a certain way around an assistance dog. But any breed can be it as long as they have the right temperament.
This really pleases me, because I've wanted to look into getting an assistance dog for myself for a long time. But my favorite breed of dog, I have two favorite breeds, which is Labradors and Rottweilers. I've grown up with them. And both of them, I find them just such lovely breeds, because they're very, you know, when they're playful, they're lovely to play around with, but they can be very calm, very loving, very loyal creatures. And so in my head, I've always had a picture of having an assistance Rottweiler, not just because, you know, I love big dogs, but also because in part of me thinks it would be really funny to say to people, here's my assistance Rottweiler.
There are actually a variety of assistance dogs that are Rottweilers. I know... Alfie, sorry. Someone's at the door.
Hello, Alfie.
That's him saying hello. Oh, God. Nice to hear. I apologize greatly. But there's actually a variety of assistance dogs that are Rottweilers that I don't know them personally, but I know them through social media. And they say that, you know, they can be quite gentle. There are Staffies that are assistance dogs. There are Great Danes that are assistance dogs. It's really about how they behave and their temperament. And generally, the only concern we usually tend to have is that there are some people who can be quite discriminatory based on assistance dog breed. And they might try to fight you on not allowing you to come in. So, for example, because I have a smaller breed of dog, a lot of people go, well, can he actually be an assistant dog? I'm like, of course he can. Here are all the rules and legislations. Ta-da. But yes, there is a top set of breeds that they recommend. One, I think, is a Labrador, is one of the top breeds recommended. So is a German Shepherd, and so is a Poodle. I think those are the top three that I can remember. But generally, any dog can be it, as long as they have the right temperament.
Fantastic. Tigger, do you want to take it away with our next question?
So, well, it's going to expand a little bit upon the question, if I may, if you're okay with that. So, because we talked about, again, at the initial bit before we hit record, that I might go off on a few tangents with questions, but it's linked to the next question, really. And how long does that training take, and how much does it cost?
Okay, so this is where it becomes, so Alfie is with an organization, so he's owner trained with an organization, which means that I get help from this organization, I pay them to help me, they also give me liability insurance, and typically most assistance dogs take about 2 years to be fully trained, but that's not always the case. For example, because Alfie was an older dog when he became an assistance dog, because you don't have to get them from puppies, he was actually an older dog when he became an assistance dog. He was actually pre-installed like a computer, but he, because he lived with me, he had a lot of his basic training done. I took very good care of him. He didn't have any issues with anything. He helped me with anxiety prior to becoming an assistance dog at home. So as soon as he had his initial assessment, he passed within 20 minutes. They were like, he's fantastic. He's brilliant. Great. He's so calm. There were children running by trolleys and he was just chilling, calm, you know, absolutely no issue. But he would have to pass a public access exam. So obviously, as I said, owner trained dogs don't actually have to pass this public access exam, but in order to go through these organizations, they will have a public access exam. This will make things easier. For example, they can actually contact companies for you if they decline you. And that makes it why people choose organizations, because it's very helpful. So if I want to go on a flight, Alfie would need to pass his public access to show that he's fully trained. Mm-hmm. And then that company would contact the airlines and they would do all the liaisoning for me, which definitely helps distribute all the things that I need to do for him. But my organization costs £45 a month. And if you can imagine, it's a lot of money, especially as in general, an assistance dog does have to have insurance. So you have to have liability insurance and regular insurance. And insurance can cost a whopping, I think, 50, 60, £70 on occasion.
On top of that?
Oh, yes, of course, because that's just dog insurance. So, you know, for vet care.
Of course.
So on top of that, it'll be like £50, then it's 45, then the gear. So my organization gives you the gear for free when you do your initial assessment, which you pay £100 for. So you pay £100 and you get the initial assessment. And he gets a vest and a little tag. But if you can imagine, other vests can cost about £50, sometimes more, if you want to get them custom. It's not the cheapest thing, I'll be very honest. It shouldn't cost a lot, to be honest, in comparison to some charities where they will actually charge you £15,000 for a dog that is fully trained. I still think the owner training is far cheaper than that because it will never rack up to that amount. But the care of a dog you have to count in. So if you're not able to take care of a dog, then I would not recommend getting an assistant dog, because that's extra costs on top.
And speaking of those costs, can you get help with funding?
So as far as I'm aware at the moment, there is actually no help for funding. So there are some charities that will offer assistance dogs for free, like Dogs for Autism. But a lot of the funding that you get is very much by yourself. So you can get a trainer to help. So most assistance dogs would require a trainer just to get them through all of their tasks. And you would have to pay that in full, you know, maybe twice a month sometimes, which can be about £45 per session with a trainer. £40, £45, you pay that for yourself. And generally the funding is not there. There is no help. There's no, you know, unless you go through a charity or AD UK where you can pay maybe like 50p for an assistance dog, such as the guide dogs. I think you pay 50p. It's not really something that is that funded unless it goes through a charity, I'm afraid.
I can tell right now that Tigger has something to add here.
We spoke about this before. I, in my years, have come across a lot of charities. Does my tone there show what I'm trying to say? I've come across many individuals who I will say have decided that it could be a money-raising event to jump onto. Hey, I know how to train assistance dogs, support dogs, etc., and do then charge a huge amount of money. And one of the things I know, you know, an issue with you know, all aspects of legislation, there's legislation about your rights when you have an assistance dog. Just asking, is there any legislation around, I don't know, quality control for organisations? That's a difficult one. My apologies.
Well, in general, the quality control that you can get from organisations or from charities is usually done by AD UK. So AD UK, or you can have IAD UK, which is the international, but it's Assistance Dogs UK. And they generally have a list of members, and those members are quality controlled. So that can be like Autism Dogs CIC is currently, has just recently become accredited. But that includes things like guide dogs, support dogs, medical detection dogs, service dogs for PTSD. But there are certain organizations that fit into that, into their candidates, and they are regulated. However, other charities may not be, but other charities may also not want to be on the AD UK membership team, maybe because I'm not sure why, but maybe they're just so picky. But that's the only really, don't know what the word is, that's the only really regulation they have. In general, as I said, you could have an assistance dog trainer say, hey, I'm a trainer of assistance dogs, you know, I specialize in assistance dogs, and in fact they don't, and they can charge you whatever they want. There is no, as long as they help you mitigate your disability, that's the guidelines you really have. And there are some, not in here that I'm aware of, but there are some boarding you know, training boards that train assistance dogs that I've heard have mistreated a lot of dogs, and have actually caused them to be washed in other parts of the world. So the regulation isn't great per se, but that's what makes it more accessible, funny enough. The fact that there's not too much regulation. I mean, within the charities, I think, yes, there should be, but yeah, within owner training, the fact that there's not a lot of guidelines means that it's more accessible. Because if you start adding, you need to have this and this and have at least 2 years and this, it makes it really difficult for people who need them and for people who are owner training their assistance dog. Because if you can imagine, if they start asking for, you know, they have to be AD UK, you know, charities, then a lot of people cannot get their dogs then, because they would not be eligible for it, because either they're not a child or they don't cover, you know, certain conditions.
So what about the actual legislation with regards to, hey, I have an awesome assistance dog and I'm going to go into that building?
Of course. So there is actually a assistance dog guide for all businesses that I will be sending over to you. Yes. That actually specifies that the legal obligation says that a disability is defined by the Equality Act of 2010. So it's defined as a physical or mental impairment which has substantial and long-term adverse effects on the ability to carry on normal day-to-day activities. And that would mean that you would have to have an assistance dog that helps mitigate those impairments or disabilities. And the legislation clearly states an assistance dog must be highly trained, and they are required not to wander freely around the premises and should just lie down and sit, you know, quietly on the floor next to the owner. They also, because they're highly trained, they will not actually, you know, foul on the premises. They won't do anything that would be considered inappropriate. But generally, the legislations are fairly, not simple per se, but they just state that the legal rights of an assistance dog is that the law allows people with disabilities to have the same rights as everyone else to use the services supplied by shops, so banks, hotels, libraries, pubs, taxis, and that it is illegal for a assistance dog or a guide dog owner to be refused access to these establishments unless medical exemption is provided. Typically, this is with taxis, but that the service providers are required to make reasonable adjustments for assistance dogs and guide dog owners. So that is why most places must allow assistance dog, because that is a reasonable adjustment for someone's disability.
Cool. And what you sent, I'll make sure gets a link, is put in the notes that we put with these podcasts as well. That'd be a really important document of access to.
Yeah, that's some really important information, actually. So I'm really glad we had that bit. So, you know, we've heard about, you know, the legislation with, you know, what's allowed around assistance dogs. But for general members of the public, who might not know, how should you behave if you see an assistance dog in public?
So this is a really important question, because a lot of people do not know how to act around assistance dogs, guide dogs, none of it. And they also don't know why. Because the biggest thing is people go, oh, they're just so cute. That's not a reasonable excuse to distract an assistance dog. But members of the public should not at any cost distract an assistance dog, especially if they're working. If they're off duty, if you want to approach them, then always approach them and say, may I pet your dog? You know, don't speak to the dog, speak to the person, because we are still human beings. We want to be spoken to us, not just directly to the dog. And, you know, occasionally there are some people who will let you, but an assistance dog should not be distracted. That means no eye contact with the dog, no yelling, it's a dog, no touching the dog, which I've heard a lot of people do, is I can't distract you. I can't pet you. Oh, you are so cute. That's distracting. Because an assistance dog is considered an auxiliary aid, which is also stated in the Equality Act of 2010. So they are a necessity for someone's disability and should not be tampered with. Touching or distracting an assistance dog is tampering with an auxiliary aid. It's not nice to refer to a dog as that, because obviously they are living beings, but that is what the law classifies them. So they have the same rights as a wheelchair. So, you know, a business can't tell you, like, don't come in with your wheelchair, because that's very illegal. Same with, you can't tell them you can't come in with an assistance dog, even though a lot of businesses like to still say that. But you shouldn't distract them at all. And, you know, especially don't distract them, don't click at them, don't whistle. Try to keep children away from them as best as they can, because the reason that you're not allowed to interact with an assistance dog is a lot of assistance dogs are performing a job. Firstly, it's just rude. I mean, if you were performing a job, you wouldn't want somebody just touching you out of nowhere, you know. But in general, if that dog's job is to alert something and you distract them, if they miss an alert, that person is at risk. The handler could be, you know, furtherly worse disabled by missing an alert. So for example, if somebody has a stroke or if somebody has an epileptic attack and their dog is there to sense that, if they miss that alert, they can, you know, fall down and hit their head. They can miss an alert, like for example with my assistance dog, which means that, oh, sorry there, my microphone's just cut out.
No, you're still there. You're still there, thankfully.
Apologies about that. My headset just cut out for a second.
That's okay.
But it's vital that you don't distract them, because of the fact that you can end up causing them to miss an alert. Or in general, if it's a guide dog handler, you can end up having them seriously hurt themselves. You know, if somebody is, you know, walking, they could hit something. Or in general, dogs are not robots. They're not perfect. They can get distracted. And we want to reduce that as much as possible so that they don't miss alerts and they don't cause the handler any discomfort or any difficulties.
Yeah, but getting in there quickly just before David does the last question. But do you know what would be really good? You could do a video of how to interact with assistance dogs, and we could share it everywhere. That'd be really cool. Because so many people don't know. And I've had various people have helped me, supported me, trained me over the years and so on. And so I've had a little bit of pre-training in what you do when you see an awesome assistance dog that is working. But for so many people, they see a dog. As you say, if while we were working, somebody walked straight up and started chatting to us and so on in the middle of presenting somebody or whatever, we'd be like, whoa, hang on a minute. And it must be for so many people. And it could be really, really devastatingly scary as well if someone just gets in the way of what awesome Alfie is doing at that moment in time.
That is actually the case. I mean, I have a story about how I was at a lecture and a lecturer who I think was substituting for somebody. I came and asked for a chair. They walked the chair up to my seat and they went down and petted Alfie whilst he was working. And clearly it was an anxious situation in general. Alfie actually missed an alert and he alerted very late. And I had to try and find like a disabled bathroom to go and, you know, calm down and have him perform his deep pressure therapy. And I wasn't able to. I was stressed, I was panicked, I was in tears, and I ended up missing most of the lecture because the fact that Alfie got distracted and he missed his alert. And that's not Alfie's fault. It's not Alfie's fault if he missed an alert. It's the fact that that man petted Alfie without consent, basically. They didn't ask for it.
Sharing that knowledge is really important. And again, that's something I hope that this awesome podcast will help with as well. I would like to go on for maybe 4 hours, but I don't think the listeners would... nor David nor you might actually let me do that. This is fascinating, but also really important as well. But we have, you know, we have a fixed time to speak to a certain degree, and David, awesome David, has one final question to ask you with your permission, if that's okay.
No, of course not. Yes, you can ask me the question.
So we told you this question was coming. It's what we end all of our podcasts with. What is your favourite stim?
Oof, this is a difficult one. I'll say one that's unconventional. I absolutely love petting Alfie and like ruffling in my hands through his fur. That is such an amazing stim for me because it feels fantastic. Just being able to run my hands through his fur, oh my goodness. Even just sniff him, you know, pet him, ruffle his hair, it feels great. Just having him there is fantastic. But I'm a bit of a stereotypical autistic person. I absolutely love like hand flapping. I love, you know, clapping my hands. I love clapping the base of my wrists together. It feels great, especially when I'm excited and happy. But I do use some stim toys now because they're a little bit more discreet than necessarily like yelping in public, because I do tend to do that. I can be a very, very much a vocal stimmer on occasions, and yelping and, you know, making some very strange, bizarre noises where people look at me and like, but I do use a few cubes here and there. I've started using something called let me get this right, because I made people laugh when I used the wrong term, a water snake. See, I previously thought they were called water willies. They're not. They're not called water willies. So yes, but one of those is one of my favorite little stim toys to use.
Absolutely awesome.
That might be one of the online. Might have been one of the best answers we got to that question. I think
so. Water snake, yeah.
Yes, although you can type in water willies and it will come up.
Fine, I'll try water snake.
Oh yeah, be careful on Amazon, there are some things that come up when you type that are not age appropriate.
Wow, they've come up with a real snake here. I'll put sensory. I'm always intrigued.
Maybe they're called water wigglies. Some people said water snake.
Wiggly jiggly?
Oh, that's probably where I got the water willy from. Water wigglies.
Yeah, I know these.
Yes, they're like a 90s toy.
Steel containers, liquid-based, squishy water snake toy.
Yeah, they're either you love them or you hate them. There is no in between.
They're cool. awesome.
My dad thinks that they feel horrible. He's like, they're so slimy. Ew. And I'm like, I love it. Like, I love the fact that it falls out of your hands and you have to like race to try and catch
yeah,
it.
Yeah, no, they are loved. I know those well from some schools. Absolutely awesome. Oh, thank you for this. As ever, make sure links are on there, the documentation you mentioned. But, you know, it just, what I hope some people get is A, how important an assistance dog is when they're working. Yeah, how important they are when they're working, and that interaction that you may want to do, you really shouldn't, can't, because of the fact of what's happening for you
them.
And other individuals.
Just ignore them. It's as simple as that. Because I could say, like, would you sit there and touch a wheelchair? But there are some people who actually do that and push people out of the way. So it's just treating that person with respect and dignity and ignoring their assistance dog as if it's like an attachment of themselves. That it's not very difficult. You just don't look at them. Don't, you know, interact with them. It's, you know, it's fairly simple. Because I wouldn't, I mean, a lot of people do this, but I wouldn't personally come up to somebody randomly on the street. And it can spook an assistance dog quite a lot, because the biggest thing as well is one of the reasons, the most important reasons why you should not distract an assistance dog, as well as, you know, you could miss an alert, is the fact that you can actually traumatize them. And if you do something that causes them to no longer be able to work, you have just significantly reduced that handler's quality of life. You've probably taken away their independence, because if they have to wash their assistance dog, which is a term for like no longer being able to work them. If you have to wash their assistance dog, then you can't, you know, you can't just get a new one really easily. It takes time, dedication, you know. And in general, some people just don't have the availability of getting another dog. And the last thing we want is for somebody to traumatize a dog by shoving their hand in their face. Because especially, like, I've had that happen to me. I had a person who would constantly shove their hand in Alfie's face and look him in the eyes. And now Alfie's a little bit scared of men, only when he's not vested. When he's vested, he's fine. But when he's not vested, he, you know, he barks a little bit. And I'll be honest, that's caused me to have to book my training sessions, like more of them, so I can get him out of that, which I shouldn't have to, because somebody was, you know, shoving their hand in his face and giving them eye contact to dominate the dog.
Really? Right. But it's such important knowledge, such important words. And it was nice to hear, though obviously working as he was, Alfie kind of make his presence felt earlier on, which was gorgeous. David, is there anything you'd like to add before we go?
I just, you know, this has been such an important one. You know, I hope that people who are thinking about getting an assistance dog, you know, they come away from this and they've got some more knowledge on how they can go about it. They know more about the law surrounding it. And as we said, it's so important for people to know that if you see an assistance dog in public, do not interact with them. Do not distract them. Because quite frankly, people's lives are on the line. And yeah, thank you so much, Edith. This has been a fantastic podcast. Tigger and I both love to talk about dogs anyway. You know,
but we've learned stuff as well. Which
we
is,
have
which
learned
is what
so
I love
much.
About these podcasts.
I'm glad too.
It is, you know, the seeing people's. We say this every time. I think seeing people's passion for these dedicated interests, these topics that they have developed real expertise in. You know, it's not just an autistic obsession. I'm doing air quotes, you know, either side of myself here. It's not just an obsession. We learn so much in-depth knowledge about these topics, and getting to share that with each other, I think, is just such a lovely thing. And that's why I love doing these podcasts. But thank you so much, Edith. It's been fantastic. And on that note, this has been the Especially Interesting Podcast from Orcademy. We have been your co-hosts, David Gray-Hammond and Tigger Pritchard. And Woo-hoo! We look forward to seeing you in the next episode.
And Edith, thank you. It was lush and
no
really
problem.
Informative.
May I just also say where you can find Alfie, if that's okay?
Oh, of course.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So you can find Alfie on Instagram at Assisting Alfie. He's also currently got a GoFundMe going on because, as I said, it is a costly process for his training, his gear, and any little bit helps, especially because I've not many people have asked, you know, is there anywhere I can donate? I'm like, you can donate straight to the people who actually have the assistance dogs, and that's more than helpful. But yes, you can follow mine and Alfie's journey on Instagram. And if you care to check out the GoFundMe, that would be great as well. And if you've got any questions, my Instagram is open, and I'm more than happy to ask anything, to answer any questions, and respond to any questions regarding that, and help anyone if I can.
I mean, all these links will be in. I'm looking now at a picture of young Alfie with his kind of necktie on after a haircut, and yes, just lush. So my apologies for getting that, but it will be on the links we'll put out with the podcast.
Yes, we will include it in the description for the podcast. It's going to be there. And thank you so much. So
no, thank you. Definitely. Thank you for having me.
No problem. Take care, everyone.
Bye, everybody. Thank you. Bye. And goodbye. Edith, thank you again. And Alfie, bye.
Thank you very much.